When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
I guess first, do you want to just introduce yourself and tell me what you do?
Sure. My name is Dr. Mai Fleming. I'm a family medicine physician at the University of California, San Francisco, at a telehealth company called Hey Jane, and I'm a fellow with Physicians for Reproductive Health.
I called up Dr. Fleming after the draft opinion overturning Roe v. Wade leaked from the Supreme Court, a draft opinion that appears to have the votes. In some ways, Fleming was expecting this, but it didn't make it easier to hear.
It still was very upsetting to see the words that were written by Justice Alito. While folks who have been working in reproductive health and access have been talking about this for a long time, I'm hoping that the shock of this, for not just us, but for everybody, really brings this issue into the mainstream.
In her practice in San Francisco, Fleming provides all kinds of medical care, including abortion. She also does something else.
I also provide telehealth medication abortion across 5 different states where I'm licensed to practice medicine through a company called Hey Jane, and I'm doing so to help broaden access to care beyond my geographic bubble.
Today on the show, a conversation with a doctor who helps facilitate abortion via the internet. The pandemic changed the way abortion care could be provided online. So what happens now? I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick with us.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Before the pandemic, if you wanted a medication abortion, where a pregnancy up to 10 weeks gestation is terminated using a 2-pill regimen, you generally needed to get the first pill from a hospital or a clinic. With the exception of a small telehealth research program, FDA rules meant that a patient who wanted a medication abortion had to see a provider face-to-face. COVID changed that. First, when a judge briefly lifted the FDA restrictions in 2020, and then in April of last year, when the agency itself temporarily allowed patients to get the drugs by mail. that meant a huge opportunity for telehealth.
A lot of the care that we've been providing in person can be carried out just as well and just as safely over the phone or through virtual video visits as in-person visits. Abortion care was one of those things. In the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a huge study that came out of England and the National Health Service there that demonstrated over tens of thousands of people who obtained medication abortion via telehealth in Great Britain were able to do so very, very safely and actually with fewer complications than the previously published numbers on safety for medication abortion. And so we were able to replicate a lot of those studies here in the United States, again, reconfirming and redemonstrating just how safe and effective medication abortion over the phone is.
I was really struck looking at that study. You know, it compared groups of women who'd had in-person appointments for a medication abortion, and they'd gotten a sort of traditional appointment with a sonogram, and then groups who had gotten it via telehealth. And essentially, the rates of complications were pretty much the same.
Right. And I do want to quickly emphasize and stress that it is not only women who obtain abortion care. People of all genders who have a uterus and have the capability of becoming pregnant do seek and obtain abortion care. So I think it's important to be inclusive in the language that we use.
Absolutely.
But whether a person is prescribed medications from an in-person clinic or a telehealth clinic, or whether they order their own medications online, these medications in the abortion process are the exact same across the board and proven to be very, very safe.
Based on studies like this and data from its own temporary rule change, the FDA decided to permanently allow patients to get abortion medication in the mail at the end of last year. That means platforms like Hey Jane, where My Fleming works, are able to provide virtual services in states where telehealth abortion is legal. With a platform like Hey Jane, do you have conversations with people who are on the fence, or do most of the patients who you are talking with, do they know what they want?
Like any medical care, there is no one size fits all for a patient encounter in any field. Some people know exactly what they need and what they want, and we are happy to help facilitate that in a safe way. There are people who may not feel 100% certain at the time that they start engaging with us, whether this is something that they want to proceed with, and we talk with folks through that.
Do you have a typical patient? I know that's a tough question. I am so interested in kind of the stats. You know, I'm sure you've seen there's a sort of a New York Times thing that they have resurfaced in the past day saying a typical patient already has children, is probably in their late 20s. I wonder if you have seen commonalities among your patients, particularly the ones who are doing this online.
Generally, I see a whole range of people coming from all different experiences and backgrounds. Some people are already parents, absolutely, and are making a decision that best fits what they need for their current families. Some folks are not parents and have never been parents. Some people have never had an abortion. Some people have had abortions before. There is not one abortion patient. There's not a typical abortion patient. A common statistic that folks reference is that one in four people of reproductive potential may need at least one abortion in their lifetime. And so most people know somebody who's had an abortion, regardless of who you are or what your circumstances are.
Where do your patients typically live? Obviously, you're physically based in California, but you're licensed in a number of states. And I'm wondering, are they, you know, in a rural part of the state and they can't physically get to a clinic because there isn't one near them?
Yeah, so that also ranges. I've had patients from very remote areas where the nearest abortion provider might be 3 or more hours away, and patients who live in a big city where abortion might be accessible, but the wait times are weeks long.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit from your perspective as a provider of what it's been like to to have the internet as another tool in your practice. You know, you've been doing this work for a while, and I wonder if having the expanded reach of the internet has made you think about being able to reach people who you couldn't reach before. What has that been like? Because it's been a pretty profound change over the past 2 years.
For folks that have ready access to internet and phone, the ability to be able to provide care in the safety and comfort of a person's own home really means a lot to some people, and particularly when we talked about very stigmatized care, right? Where a person doesn't have to travel for sometimes hours, sometimes days to access care. They may not have to get childcare. They may not have to travel through angry protesters to try to reach their doctor or their healthcare provider in order to access this care. It has been a really important avenue.
Of course, the digital divide means that people who don't have reliable internet access have a harder time getting telehealth abortion care.
Outside of kind of the internet access piece, not everybody has access to a safe space in their own home or in their own situation in order to access care. Whether folks are victims of interpersonal or domestic violence, folks have been victims of trafficking, or don't feel safe disclosing the type of medical care that they need with their family or other people who live in their household. It is for those reasons telehealth is not the answer. It doesn't actually address the root issue, which is the overall lack of accessibility in the first place, and is only accessible largely in the states with permissive abortion laws. We already know that, you know, many states already have, and if they don't already have, they're working on it, legislation to restrict and eliminate abortion access via telehealth, and for some, just medication abortion in general.
When we come back, what those telehealth abortion laws mean for patients.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Despite the FDA rules, 19 states restrict the use of telemedicine for abortion care. That can either mean an outright ban or requiring that a clinician is present when the pills used for medication abortion are administered, which in effect means telemedicine can't be used.
For the people who are in the states where they are not able to use telemedicine for medication abortion, if abortion is still accessible in those states, they may be traveling very far distances to obtain care. If not, they may be traveling to distant states in order to access care. Some people may be ordering their own pills online. I think the biggest risk with folks self-managing their abortions at home is not the medical piece. We've already well established in this, you know, whole talk how safe these medications are for people, but it's really the potential legal repercussions. We've seen criminalization of folks who have self-manage their abortion. And even by extension, we've seen criminalization of people who are actually suffering a miscarriage, where a person who they have reached out to for help and for medical care have reported them for suspicion for a self-managed abortion or self-induced abortion, when in fact, it's really a miscarriage, right? So it's not surprising that the folks who are most at risk of being criminalized are the same folks that are at highest risk of being criminalized in our country in general, folks of color, folks who are undocumented, gender diverse folks, folks who are in lower income communities. And I worry about the state of increasing restrictive and punitive climate on the ways in which people on the ground may end up translating those restrictions and laws into criminalizing patients who are seeking medical care.
You know, the internet has made meds easier to get, even if you are not talking to a board-certified doctor like yourself. I wonder if we are contemplating this post-Roe future, will those informal networks get bigger? Will the internet play an even larger role here?
We have a lot of experience of what a post-Roe world will look like in the state of Texas. There was a study that looked at how the demand and request for medications through aid access changed in Texas after the implementation of SB 8. And the number of requests, honestly, not only in Texas, but actually across the country, increased by a very significant degree, by multiple magnitudes. And I don't have those numbers off of the top of my head, but if that's any indication, I wouldn't be surprised if that would happen. But we have yet to see.
Can you imagine a future where you're helping people in those states get medication over the internet?
Regardless of what the law is in any given state, there are always going to be people whose goal and mission is to help folks access safe care, whether that be through logistical means of helping folks travel across state lines, if they're able to, providing monetary and logistical support to do so, or helping get folks the information that they need to safely manage their own care where they are.
Dr. Mai Fleming, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Mai Fleming is a family medicine physician and fellow with Physicians for Reproductive Health. That is it for the show today. TBD is produced by Ethan Brooks. We're edited by Tori Bosch. Joanne Levine is the executive producer for What Next. Alicia Montgomery is the executive producer for Slate Podcasts. TBD is part of the larger What Next family, and it's also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. And for a broader understanding of what happened at the Supreme Court, I recommend that you listen to Wednesday's episode of What Next. Mary Harris talks with the invaluable Dahlia Lithwick. We'll be back on Sunday with another episode. And Lizzie O'Leary, thanks for listening.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.